Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
What's up, Las Vegas, and welcome in. There is no Steve Cofield today. Another rousing edition of Antovi y Los Vatos on this wonderful Monday in August. Willie Ramirez alongside. Griff on the controls as well. I feel like I needed to come on. Get it going. A lot of low energy in the room today. Absolute silence in the seconds leading up to the show. Willie, what's going on?
Saving it all for the show. Just saving it all for the show, bro. It's hot outside. You have to ease your way into the building. You have to ease your way into the car, driving, ease your way. It's been a long day so far. Up early to the you know the deal, bro. Writing early, gym, back home, more writing. Had a little conference call here and there. Ready for the show though. I saw I was on with you have to here's the thing. There are certain people you have to prepare in certain ways. You have to prepare mentally, you have to prepare, you have to detail. You're a unique preparation. So
ooh. Yeah. What's the unique part about it?
I can't reveal all
the trade secrets.
Yeah.
I'm in a very good mood today. For many different reasons. First off, I will say I was up early as well. Now I am an early riser. My general wake up time is like 4 AM on the daily, working, doing all those sort of things. How about this? I'm going to unveil something. Not a violation of HIPAA, but it is involved with my health. Are you ready for this? I thought that only children could get tonsillitis. Turns out that's not true because I have it. How about that? I had no idea. I had this stabbing pain in my throat for nearly 2 weeks. Okay. Went to the clinic. Found out that I have it.
It's not the first time you've been to the clinic, but that's a whole other story.
It's very untrue. Did you know that?
That you go to the clinic a lot?
No, that like you could get tonsillitis as an adult.
What is tonsillitis?
Yeah. I assume it's just like my tonsils are swollen and it's kind of like a throat thing, infection of some sort.
Yeah. I think it's the fact that it's so often where kids get it and they get their tonsils taken out.
Right.
You hear it so many times with the kids and then you rarely hear it with adults. I think that with the adults it's just a procedure that nobody really talks about it, but I'm sure it's I don't think it's I think it's rare, but it's just not talked about.
Yep.
With the kid, it's like, oh, kid's got tonsillitis.
See, so I'm afflicted, but I'm here, full energy, ready to go. Not contagious, by the way.
No,
you can only pass on. Well, I can pass it on to you if we share a drink or things like that. So, no kisses for my wife to make me feel better for the next couple of days.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, not
don't
want to mouth.
Pass it along. Yes, correct. I got one on my forehead before I left today.
Cheek.
You know, have a good day.
Neck.
But forehead. She was a little busy. Because it was the first day of school. This is why I'm fired up. I am so stoked because to me, now this, my kid's only in first grade, okay? So it's the first day of first grade. That is kind of a cool milestone in and of itself. It's
it
actual
is.
Grade school, right? Yeah. Kindergarten's like one thing, and then now it's grade school.
Right.
But the other is, now that I've had this benchmark for me, now the last two summers, this summer and last year, to me, this is the official turn into fall. This Saturday, we are officially 1 week away from week zero in college football. School is in session. To all your parents out there that right now have just picked up your kids from your first day of school, first off, to your children, hope you had a good first day. Second, congrats to you for making it through the summer. We're here. But this is fall, baby. I'm fired up.
I just had the conference call I had today.
Yeah.
I said I had a conference call. I explained to them, and the introduction to the meeting was, I'll even read it to you because I still have the, because I typed the intro,
mm-hmm.
and then the publisher of the said, "We know many people celebrate the new year on January 1, but let's face it, in our world, our new year is about to begin. We're in week one of preseason football, and college football is 2 weeks away with week zero. This is the new year for us. This is when it begins. This is like our fiscal year, if you will.
Correct.
Because it all begins. You know one thing I am a little thankful for? Well, probably a lot of thankful for. I just moved. If you remember, for years, I'd be coming in from Aliante. So I moved to the...
I totally remember that.
Moved to the stream south side.
Okay.
What I noticed today, in driving where I had to go this morning early to one route to the gym, coming here... No school zones.
I mean, that's pretty early, though, right? Or are you saying you don't have any schools around you?
There's probably schools around me, but the routes that I took, there's no. Because I went to the gym, I trained at 6:30-ish. So But coming home, it would have been on.
Sure.
And going down with the other, coming here, there's no school zone. Now, there is still construction, our state flower, the cone, but no school zones that I could see. So we'll find out. There's only, off the top of my head, from this summer, driving to where I've been driving around, there's only one school zone I know of on my way to Raiders facility.
Okay.
Or Aces, if whichever practice I'm going to.
Sure.
Outside of that, not a lot around me. I'm very appreciative of that.
I'm a big school zone guy.
They're
very dedicated to the craft. Once you get in the school zone, you hit the brakes.
Very, very big
school zone guy.
No, I just don't. You know, you just, it's one of those things where you want to hit the brakes. Blah, blah, blah. No, of course, I always abide by the school zone.
So I'm very big. I think my theme here to open the show is new beginnings, right? New beginnings.
Okay.
New school year, new football season. By the way, new beginnings for me personally as well. My kid is starting Little League for the first time.
Oh,
he is officially, he has been officially named to the roster. We are now White Sox coach pitch.
Coach pitch?
Yes.
Oh, so you didn't do T-ball?
No, we do T-ball on our own, and then we're going to coach pitch. That's when I started playing. Like my first, I never played T-ball. I went straight to coach pitch. It's pretty developmental still, so we're feeling pretty good.
So
he is now a member of the White Sox.
Jordan did, when he was really small, City of Las Vegas offered this thing called Teeny Weeny Sports.
Mm-hmm.
8-week sessions of soccer, T-ball, basketball, but the T-ball and the basketball was with the little tykes, the hard plastic stuff. But you had 8 weeks, and when you look up with a week in between each sport, you're at 26 weeks. You went through 6 months. Pretty cool. Very inexpensive. So then by the time he got to being five, he did 2 years of T-ball, Spring Valley Little League. Then we did the coach pitch. Then he went into the minors and the majors and the so on and so forth. And we did the fall ball, too.
Oh, yeah.
We did fall ball from Spring Valley when we went to the old school park up on West Sahara with Potosi. And it was 1 year where Dusty Baker was still the coach of the Cubs. And Greg was – he had come back to the Cubs to finish off his career sort of. And Dusty told him, just go home. You're good. And he removed him from the rotation and let him come home. And Greg Maddux was our bench coach.
Huh.
Chase Maddux and Jordan were the one and two.
Yep.
It was fun.
And that's what, like, that's why, and this is the reason why I bring this up. It's not to tell everybody about my life, but I feel like I am going to, starting this week, show my son or tell him a little bit, like, buddy, you know, Little League's great. I always tell him, this is my number one rule. This is my good father moment. You ready? This is our number one rule when we do anything, play anything. I don't need you to be the best. I need you to try your best. It's our steadfast rule when we do things, right? But he might have a little pressure on him because baseball out here, as we know, there's a very deep history, and it gets even deeper, as we learned on Friday, because for the fourth time now, Nevada's going to go to the Little League World Series. I feel like I've got to actually tell him. Like,
how
Wednesday,
old is he?
He's going to be seven in a couple of weeks.
Well, yeah, so in 5 years.
Got to
so
start schooling him up.
He's on the recruiting trail now.
Yes.
It's already, I mean, you're 5 years removed from where he, because in reality, after coach pitch, once you get to minors, I mean. It's kid pitch, and it's all-stars, and that's where they start growing their game. You got to make the all-stars to get into the, then you go from your Little League all-star tournament to your state, then regional, and then. So he's realistically, it's like he's in rookie ball.
That's right.
He's a rookie, then single, then double, then triple, and then the majors. So this is big for him.
This big.
It's huge.
I'm feeling like I should become the overbearing sport father, though. I feel like I'm going to make a turn.
Screw
all this like mamby-pamby. Just try your best, buddy. No. I think we're going to start to really ratchet this thing up.
Well,
I want him to be a pro.
No, you can do try your best. Here's the thing. And you could be that guy. No, let's go. Let's go. What do you mean? Blah, blah, blah. Here's my number one advice to you. Okay? Number one advice to you. And trust me, I'm not telling you this because I know any better. I'm telling you this because I learned from my mistakes because I was this guy for a minute. Don't be the drive home guy.
Ooh, what's the drive home guy?
The guy that just rails on his son the entire drive home.
Oh, man, that was like my number one go-to.
No, do it all at the field.
In front of everybody. Embarrass him in front of them. That's good.
No, you don't have to be embarrassing, but you can just rail him and be hard on him and coach him up and do it. Once you get in the car, it's all over. Leave it on the field.
Griffin, what kind of a parent upbringing did you get? Like, was your dad you're going to play football, son?
I wish. Nah. I had a mother.
Ooh.
I had a mother who every time we would drive home, keep in mind, the woman is not sports-centric. She's never been a big sports fan. So once I started football and I was in practices and my coaches were going up to hey, this kid might, you know, he's a little bigger. He's got some size to him. He's just got to be a little more aggressive. I'd be driving home with her in the car, and she would just be telling me things like, you know, your coaches are kind of telling me that you're not being very aggressive. Like, we signed you up for this because we thought you'd be going all out, but you're kind of slacking a little bit. So I basically had to have my mother tell me, you know, toughen up a little bit and actually go out there and start smacking people. So
basically she was putting that off on the coaches, though.
Yeah. She's smart, like that.
She was misplacing the discipline on. She was, you know,
she didn't want her little baby boy to think that she thought he was being a pansy. So she made sure the coaches took the blame for that. But yeah, my mom always had a way of kind of manipulating the message to get it across without taking the blame for it as well.
See?
I wish I would have had that.
That's good parenting, right? Good parenting, the dynamic. This, I'm very excited for it. The dynamic of parenting now involving sports.
Oh, man, this is going to be great.
A similar dynamic between Deion Sanders and Shedeur Sanders.
Is there any way, God, I wish I could roll with you and just film it, and we could do a whole documentary and sell it to Netflix.
When he eventually becomes a professional, which will happen.
Or when
son,
you just,
if you're listening, it will happen.
Or when you just drive him into the ground.
Either one.
Or delivers the Las Vegas Athletics, a World Series.
It's either that. It's either he stays home and delivers the Athletics World Series, or JVT drives him straight out of Athletics and he becomes an EDC DJ.
I will say, if I had to project him for something, he's not bad with the hand-eye coordination. He actually has, I think, a decent arm.
Oh,
like, nice. In terms of putting it where it needs to be and, like, some velocity on it. I don't know if that's, like, he's a righty.
Yes.
Yeah. So, hey, if he could be a long reliever for a really long time, I'm down.
Yeah.
I got to ask you really quick. So, as a father with a son in athletics, is there the fear component? Was there ever a fear component with him, you know, maybe being afraid of getting hit by the ball, afraid of a ball flying at him?
Really?
How do you get a kid to overcome that fear, especially when they're first starting out in sports?
I mean, he still kind of got it, but, like, we were catching pop flies the other day, and he got popped right in the mouth. And he, you know, took him a minute to, like, kind of rub it off, and then boom,
it off.
We're good.
Huh.
Yeah.
Jordan never really had that fear in baseball. You know what Jordan was afraid of? Because the other thing that I started him right at five was USA Taekwondo sanctioned sparring and whatnot. Like, we're talking Colorado Springs type stuff. Mm. And he was obviously afraid of getting kicked. So instead of...
So you started kicking him at home?
I didn't, but that was one of the drills with the Junior Olympic training, was they would go up and down the mat trading kicks to each other's chest protector. And we had to teach the kids, instead of flinching, and you just step back and retaliate rather than trying to block it with your fingers or your hands. Something's going to happen. You're going to bust your finger. You're going to bust your hands. That helped. Martial arts helped with the hand-eye coordination, in case you want to convince the wife.
You know what? That's on the list as well.
Nice.
And then it became even more so. See, this is why I'm good at parenting. I showed my son the 1995 classic, The Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie. And we watched that over the weekend, and he was watching him do flips and kicking and all that stuff. He's like, I want to learn how to do that. I was like, son, I've got somewhere to take you if you want to learn how to do that.
Just
let's
make
do
sure
this thing.
It is not fast food martial arts.
I don't know what that means.
I'll fill you in off the air.
Okay, all right. We don't want to throw anybody under the bus. But I will say this. I feel like throwing Kevin Stefanski under the bus. Because the Cleveland Browns had quite the showing over the weekend, and we can pick this up on the other side. Shedeur Sanders made his debut as a Cleveland Browns quarterback, and I thought he was great. And I want to say this right now for everybody to hear, why not? Why can't he be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns?
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Preseason all the rage, and rightfully so. The NFL's back. Football's back. We're going to have college football in just over a week as well. And we get to see some new faces. This is the time of hope. Hope springs eternal. And we got to finally see Shedeur Sanders in an NFL uniform over the weekend. Browns get the win 30-10. By the way, we will get to the gambling aspect of the NFL preseason coming up at 4:45 with Chuck Edel, who's going to be with us, part of a panel out there at Circa, which I'm very excited for. That I will be out there attending and watching and hopefully getting smarter, and I know I will be. But the Browns send their guy out there, 14-23, 138 yards, 6 yards per attempt, 2 touchdowns, helps lead them to a 20-point win in the first week against Carolina, which, by the way, was about a touchdown favorite in the game, we should note, too. played their starters for a series and then got out of there.
Yeah, six, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, I keep hearing every day leading up to and after the it's only the preseason. It's football, okay? It is football. Now, you're not coming out of a preseason and saying this guy is a Hall of Famer. But you know what you can do, Willie? You can look at a guy, play the way Shedeur Sanders did on 23 pass attempts, and go, you know what? Moment wasn't too big for him. He was making his reads, made some NFL-level throws. Early in his start, he had a beautiful layered throw that went over the linebacker's outstretched hand and dropped it right between him and a safety. It was brilliant. It was a brilliant throw. He deserves the opportunity to compete at a higher level for this crappy quarterback job that the Cleveland Browns are rolling out there. That should be the takeaway from this last week. Why can't it be?
The people that are saying what you just said,
it's just a preseason.
Guess what? If he flops, guess what those people?
Up!
See? He's a flop. That's why he went in the fifth round. He's a waste. Get rid of him. Dump him. They were chomping at the bit waiting for him to flop. Those people that are saying it was just a preseason game, let's not jump the gun. You're absolutely right. And this is a game in which we're seeing equal levels, and you're seeing a kid who, hey, by all of his critics' notion, you know, he's a fifth-round pick. So he wasn't supposed to look as good as he was in his debut and starting for the Browns in his first pro, right? Look at his mechanics. Look at how he performed. Look at his mentality. Look at his poise. It's not about win, lose. It's about assessing the talent in what you in the performance. So you nailed it. And the critics we're just chomping at the bit. And those are the type of people that we're waiting to. If those same people that said it's just preseason, if he gets the start this week, which Stefanski said he's not ready yet, he'll know Wednesday or Thursday whether or not who's going to start and if he's going to start for this week. If he flops this week, those same people they've voided themselves from any assessment of this young man's talent the rest of the preseason now. Mm. If they're haters of him, it doesn't matter. You are now not allowed to talk about Shedeur Sanders for the rest of the preseason.
Yep. And who are we, right? I'm just Jonathan Von Tobel, a father of a future MLB superstar. Yep. You are Willie Ramirez, a writer here in the Las Vegas area. Let's hear from an actual professional, Dan Orlovsky. This is exactly what we're talking about. I'm not telling you that Shedeur is the greatest quarterback we've ever seen. This is the way you should evaluate guys in the preseason.
Prove to me that he's absolutely demanding of more reps with the second and first teams, against the second and first teams. Everything out of camp has been Shedeur had another good day. Shedeur's been really good. Shedeur was the best quarterback in camp. And then you get the opportunity to start. And if you just ask, what did he look like? Comfort and total control. He played really fast. He didn't panic. Okay, so those are all the things that you saw. Then his own words, he had that smirk on his face of, I felt like I had the answers to the test. That's what it looked like.
It did. He looked comfortable. But then what do I see today? Two things. I see the order in which the snaps were divvied up in practice. And Shedeur is, again, bottom of the list. We get the depth chart released for the Browns today. It was actually about 20 minutes before we came on the air. Adam Schefter tweeted it out. Number one, Joe Flacco. Number two, Kenny Pickett. Number three, Dylan Gabriel. Number four, Shedeur Sanders. Every single report has been that Dylan Gabriel is in above his head. I don't understand this dynamic. He's better than where he was drafted. He showed up at a preseason game with limited snaps and practice. Looked as comfortable as you possibly could. Graded out well, by the way. PFF in the game itself gave him a 75.4 for his passing grade, 82.1 overall, all well above average marks. Didn't throw a single interceptable pass. And we're like, nah, I don't know. And who are you? You're the Browns. We know what Joe Flacco is. I'm a Colts guy. I watched it up close. I watched last year as people screamed, you got to start him over Anthony Richardson. And they did, Will. You know what they did? They lost two games. He was awful, and they had to go back to Anthony Richardson again. Pickett's got a bum hamstring. We know what both of those guys are. You know what you don't know? You don't know what Shedeur Sanders is. And he has been tested, and then, of course, the first time you throw him in front of everybody, he performs at an exemplary level. I just don't understand it, man. I don't get it.
And isn't Dylan Gabriel banged up a little bit?
Yes, he's got his own tight hamstring he's dealing with, too.
So, and I mean, I don't know how much, maybe that's just for the official depth chart, like they're just releasing it, but as far as the reps are concerned, we don't know until he Stefanski addresses it, and he really didn't address that much because I'm reading the quotes, and it's, you know, I'm not there on the game itself. By Wednesday or Thursday, I'll have a better feel for the game and how we're going to handle that. And then he talked about Gabriel doing some 11-on-11, mindful of tightness in the hammy, Kenny not just in on 11-on-11. Not a lot of – I don't know how much he even said, I'm not going to get into reps, other than to say we're going to continue to mix these guys. Perhaps – he liked what he saw in the game, and he wants to see more out of these other guys. We don't know. But you're right. It's time that we pay Shedeur Sanders some respect. Now, my question to you is, with week zero, week one right around the corner, and his father busy in Boulder, how much has his absence helped focus and concentrate and possibly elevated his game?
Shedeur?
Yeah, how much do you think that's helped?
I mean, I don't know if it's helped or not. I think he's always been this guy. They're every reputable ESPN, NFL draft analyst, regardless of network, slated them as a first to a second round talent. I think he's always been this guy.
But I don't mean help him with what he did in the game. I'm just saying in general, his camp. And not having to maybe have his dad there. Because that was the big question, wasn't it? Wasn't a lot of the talk, you know, is his dad, I mean, think about it. Is his dad going to, are we going to have to deal with his dad? Is that going to be part of the draft process? Is like, do we have to deal with Deion Sanders? Do we have to look over our back? Is he going to be, Shedeur is without his dad for the first time in what, his whole life in terms of on the football field? Mm. It's got to help him mentally.
I guess where I'm getting disconnected with you is I don't know why Deion's presence is automatically assumed to be a negative for him. It is perceived by most to be a negative, but he's also played well while Deion has been his coach.
And now he's not. So when he's not his coach, it would be better if he's not there. So he's not in his ear. We don't know if he's in his ears because he could be on the phone, yes. But what I mean is, yes, you're right. When he's his coach in high school or college or pro or
to Colorado.
But now he's not. So let him go, be coached, leave him alone. You see what I'm saying? You know, the problem is JVT is ready to be that coach of his son, so he's in that mindset.
I assume I'll be the their head coach is still in college baseball, so I'll be the head coach of the Hustlin' Rebels soon.
You'll be the manager.
Yeah, I'll be the manager soon.
Skipper.
Yeah.
Skipper JVT.
The Hustlin' Rebels with my son being the top selection for NIL. I think, and we do this a lot, there's too many strong opinions on either side.
Yep.
I don't understand what the Browns strategy is. And you've got a kid who's actually been performing relatively well by all accounts.
I will say the only thing that I've ever been critical, and if you remember when Big 12 Media came here, I got a chance to ask both of them questions. I've never been critical of the kid's talent. I've never badmouthed him once as his talent is concerned. I just felt that I agreed with what was being said out there in terms of whatever was taking place in these meetings, whatever was taking place in these interviews, that could have been the case. But his talent speaks for itself.
Now, back to Cofield and Company.
Asia, release jumper, good! And that is good night, Irene. Asia Wilson with 32 points, 19 rebounds. How about that from the MVP?
All right, you heard it. TC Martin on the call. How about that indeed? 32 points, 20 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals on 13 of 25 shooting. Asia Wilson leading the Aces to their first 4-game winning streak of the season?
Yeah.
Really? Wow. And doing it against the powerhouses of the WNBA.
Well,
the best the WNBA has to offer have fallen at the feet of the Aces over the last 4 games.
Well, I think only one.
Oh. Well, tell me at least, because they've won 6. Is it 6 out of 7?
7 out of
8. 7 out of 8? Mixed
no,
in
six
there.
Out of seven.
Yeah, 6 out of 7. Mixed in there, though, isn't a historic loss, though, to like the Minnesota Lynx, right?
A historic loss to the Lynx.
Oh, damn.
back-to-back wins over the Valkyries, who are in the mix for a playoff position, and the Seattle Storm, who have been in the top five all season. Other than that,
I know enough about the WNBA to tell you that I don't think a Storm victory is that impressive.
Not right now, because the Storm have now sunk to, I think, a five-game losing skid after losing in L.A. last night. So all of a sudden, they
can't fool me on that one, Whitley.
I don't know what happened with them. I really don't. They started the season strong, and then all of a sudden, they've fallen off. I really don't. It's really hard to tell what's going on right now with the WNBA. What I do know is this. From a betting standpoint, which you can appreciate, giving if I was going to wager some money, just action, why not throw money at the Aces to win the title at 25 or 30 to 1, knowing if you throw $100 on a 30 to 1 ticket, that's going to pay $3,000 and they get in the playoffs, but they're making the run at the right time. It's not a bad. And Asia Wilson, by the way, Nafisa Collier's injured.
Yes.
She wrenched her ankle here. Up 42 points, and Cheryl Reeve had her in because, get this, JVT, no game is in the books against Las Vegas.
I saw it. Yeah. I'd have fired her on the spot, by the way.
If she stays out and Asia continues to play like they are and the Aces end up as a top four seed, Asia's going to get some MVP votes.
She's going to be some.
She's 50 to 1.
Nobody's taking Nafisa. Nafisa Collier's not losing out on the MVP.
If she never plays the rest of the season.
She's going to be back in 2 weeks.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was reading reports today.
Yeah.
You think she's done?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't think she's. No way. Not Nafisa Collier.
I would also assume that she wants to win the MVP and thus will make her way back.
No, I think. Well, I don't think that she doesn't want to win it, but I think she wants to win the WNBA title more than anything.
After they were robbed last year.
And yes, 100%. 1,000% after they were robbed last year with Kathy Engelbert sitting in the stands of the Barclays Center wearing an outfit with the Statue of Liberty.
Of course.
She didn't want to present a trophy to New York. Come on!
I'm getting angry. I might have had a cross-sport futures parlay riding on that bad boy. I'm getting angry just thinking about it. All right, well then since you're bringing this up, let's expand this out.
Okay.
So I'm adamant. I've been adamant about this. You're the WNBA guy, so I want a secondary opinion on this. If you agree with me, great. If you don't, I'm right. You're wrong. I don't think there is any question that the Lynx are the best team in the WNBA.
Since day one.
And I will take this a step further. Two things. First off, the betting market is incorrect in pricing the Liberty and the Lynx so closely together. I think there's a gap. Right now, you're talking like plus 150-ish for the Lynx, plus 160 for the Liberty. Some spots have it flipped. No question. I'm citing MGM on that on those odds that I just referenced right now.
I'll give you the updates of the place where you'll be every Sunday this year for football. Lynx current 7-5, Liberty current 8-5.
Okay.
So there you go.
They're right there with each other. So first off, I think that's a joke. Second, I understand that neither team was fully healthy yesterday. I don't care. That game showed me everything I needed to know. You tell me if I'm wrong or not, but at the trade deadline, when the Lynx went out and they decided as a team, you know what? No, we're not good enough here. We're going to go get Dejounte Carrington. And I saw Carrington guard Sabrina Ionescu, and I thought, you know who can't get by Dejounte Carrington off the bounce? Sabrina Ionescu. You know who went 0-for-6 from three-point range and kind of looked like crap with Carrington guarding him? She had to go 0-for-6 on all three of them with Carrington as her primary defender. But you get my point. That was a brilliant addition. A Lynx team that is one of the best in the WNBA. Then at some point, Nafisa Collier is coming back. She's going to be healthy. Whether it's regular season, postseason, I trust she's back. That is by far, I think, the best team in the league. I don't understand where this rigid belief in here is that the Liberty are on par with them. I just don't get it.
I don't know this. I'm 100% on board because I've been on board since and just as pissed as Nafisa, Cheryl, and you since Game 5 of last year. Just as angry. And there was no doubt that Nafisa Collier was going to do what she did in her own league and Unrivaled, in what she did at the All-Star. She's on a mission. She's on the same mission that Asia Wilson was on a couple years ago.
Sure.
Okay. I just think that the New York Liberty have been so dominant in a general for 3 years since losing to the Aces in the finals and then winning last year and then being the defending champs, that it's sort of one of those things where you don't want to get caught with whatever the odds may be. And the fact that they're still the Liberty, they still have Breanna Stewart, Jonquel Jones, Sabrina Ionescu, they still have a core there.
And Stewart was injured, is injured.
Is injured. So, and to your point about, you know, they're both were shorthanded yesterday. In my opinion, I mean, Nafisa Collier is the best player in the league this season, even though Asia Wilson can still and it should be considered the best player on the planet in general.
Sure.
But them missing Brianna and Minnesota missing Nafisa still, then it's like, okay, well, your best player's gone, our best player's gone. Minnesota dominated. It was funny because before the game, I texted with a New York reporter. And they're like, oh, yeah, no, Liberty should win this one. The second I saw that, it was one of those things where you as a professional bettor and a handicapper, when you probably get texts from certain people and you'd be like, oh, I'm automatically on the other side. Like if I had apps with money in it, I'd have bet the Lynx.
Sure.
No, you're 100% right. And with Desjardins, I don't know this for a fact. Perform. So don't let anybody out there listening think that I know something. I don't. But what I do think is this. It wouldn't surprise me if Nalissa Smith, as good as she's playing for the Aces and as happy as she's been and as free as she's been with all the organizations that she's played for, if she did not reach out to her girlfriend and said, girl, get out of Dallas. The toxicity is there. Go find yourself a place where you have a place to win. You will feel much better. And she encouraged that and reached her agent and said, get me somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they started negotiating because Nalissa left Dallas and came here. And yes, they've been playing the bottom of the barrel, bottom of the standings, but they've won 8 of 11, and sure, they're looking good. They're looking a lot better than they did. They look cohesive and balanced. Desjardins fits in great up there because she's with a winning culture, and she's with a no-nonsense coach who's going to respect who she is. Just go out there, do your job. I don't care what you do on social media, here, there, whatever. I'm not going to argue with you. I respect your game. I'm not expecting you. You just come in and you know my credentials as the coach of Team USA and a long-tenured coach who's won multiple WNBA titles, who, by the way, coached Maya Moore, who in some people's books is the greatest player of all time. Some people say Candace. Some people say DT. It's a great fit. So everything you said, I have nothing to disagree with because I think that the Lynx are the best team in the league. I think that they should win the WNBA title, yes. Are there dangerous teams out there that I would say these are the teams to look out for if they get hot down the stretch and go into the playoffs on a run? Yes. But without a doubt, since day one, I've been saying the Minnesota Lynx are the best team in the WNBA. And mainly because of Nafisa Collier. So for to do what they did yesterday in New York is a statement.
All right, so first off, then that's why I go back to what you were talking about. Do you, even given a big number, do you honestly think the Aces in a best of whatever series can actually beat a team like that?
Right now, no.
Okay.
But if they continue to play like they're doing right now and they continue to get better and stronger, the odds are going to drop on them. So all of a sudden, let's say they go into the playoffs at 10-1. I'd rather have a 30-1 ticket as a long shot and hedge my way out. I'm not talking about – I'm not betting – you know this. Come on, bro. You play odds and numbers and for percentages and both sides. I'm playing a 30-1 shot that they get into the postseason and I could start hedging my way out at the back. All I got to do is get if I put $100, I put $1,000. I just got to get my money back in the playoffs. If the playoffs started tomorrow and the Lynx were their first opponent, they're not beating the Minnesota Lynx. But we don't know how good and how much better and how much improved. The fact that Jewel Lloyd went to Becky Hammon and said bench me and bring me in as a reserve, and they bring Nalissa Smith in, and we're seeing different components step up. I've seen Jackie Young. Her numbers have had an uptick. They're not dramatically better, but they're an uptick since Jewel Lloyd has come off the bench because it's allowed Jackie to get into her rhythm early. So who knows what's going to happen in a month? There's still a lot of time. When I say a lot of time, it's not like the end of the season is next week.
Right.
The Aces have 12 games left, and a lot of them are at home. We'll see a lot this Wednesday when the Liberty come to town, and Liberty have been losing. So, but there's nothing that I can disagree with you about. The Lynx are the best team in the league. There's not a team that could beat them in a 7-game series right now, including the Aces. But when you look up and down this lineup of teams, all 13 teams, which team would I want to bet my money on? I'm not going to throw it on the Lynx and Liberty because the value's gone. Why not take the Aces at 25-1?
Back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, we'll have to follow up on this a little bit later, but this is breaking right now. The Nevada Supreme Court has ruled to keep John Gruden's email leak case out of arbitration. We'll have some more details on this as they come along. That is a big win legally for one John Gruden, who is in headlines today as well because he said he would die to coach in the SEC. But that all pales in comparison. Not really. But I was geeked as we got news today for many different reasons. It's one of those things where it's like, I'm not really the biggest Dana White fan as like a guy. But this is pretty big news. Paramount has agreed to a deal to buy UFC rights, $7.7 billion with a B, dollars, over the course of 7 years. They've acquired the U.S. rights to TKO Group's UFC. It's going to begin in 2026. The agreement is for all 43 annual UFC live events, which will be exclusively streamed in the U.S. on Paramount Plus. Now, why this is a big deal? Many different reasons. First off, if you're a UFC fan, no longer do you need to double dip in being... Griffin, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the MMA guy. I believe you had to have an ESPN Plus subscription and you had to buy the pay-per-view.
Yes.
That is correct, right?
That's correct.
So you had to double dip there. Very expensive. Obviously paying per card, numbered card, every single time. The other reason why this is huge... Woo! Throw out! Get your black on. Wear all black. Right? Get the veils over your faces. We're going to a funeral. You know who died? Pay-per-view, baby.
Pay-per-view.
Because CBS is also going to simulcast. Now, there was some confusion initially because the CBS folks came out, or there was somebody that came out initially and said, we're doing all of them. He was a little geeked on CNBC. Some more details have come out. Ariel Helwani tweeted this out earlier. More clarity on the breakdown of events, CBS, Paramount+. Dana White told CBS Sports HQ, quote, it's looking like four events a year on CBS. So as Ariel Helwani points out, if my reading is correct, sounds like four big numbered events on big CBS, the rest of the numbered shows on Paramount Plus, which makes sense because obviously they want people to subscribe. Mark Shapiro was the one that hinted that a vast majority of the numbered cards would be on CBS. But the point here is that you'll get four numbered cards on CBS. You just get to watch them on CBS.
Right.
The rest will be on Paramount Plus for, this is the important part, as the people at CBS or at Paramount Plus have pointed out, only $12.99 a month gets you everything. We'll see if that sticks. But either way, $12.99 a month, if you're a MMA / UFC fan, gets you every event. Boom, you're done. Wash your hands of it. Let's go. Massive.
It's huge. And the thing that tips it over, that gives you the sort of incentive for, or the should have be the anticipation for all this, is not only that, but let's not forget the venture that Dana White is going into starting next month.
Boxing.
That's on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Not Netflix and then go buy pay-per-view and it'll be on Netflix.
Correct.
So you have to have Netflix. The question is, how many streaming apps are you going to have to get all this stuff? But nevertheless, if he's taken over, if he comes in and does what he's done, and boxing pay-per-view goes away, and now UFC pay-per-view goes away, we're really going to kiss pay-per-view bye-bye.
Right.
There's only going to be one thing that I can think of that draws, in an athletic sense, whether you want to consider it a sport or not, that right now that draws in millions and millions of buys is what? WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, there's really no outside, you know, NFL is on Prime.
Was it WWE just agreed to, is it ESPN, correct? They
struck a deal, but I don't know if that means that they're pay-per-views. They may do like an ESPN Plus like UFC was doing, and maybe that's why, right? They got that, so UFC moves on. I don't know, but it's definitely a sign of the times. I mean, times are changing, and they're sort of reverting back. We talked about this a couple of months ago, as it reminds me of when I was little, you could watch a heavyweight championship match, Muhammad Ali. You look up how many Muhammad Ali fights, championship fights, were on Saturday afternoon, ABC, Wild World of Sports.
Right.
5 p.m. So.
It's a big deal. It really is. And I don't want to be the stickler here who's, you know, trying to rain down on this party. But there are certain things that come up to me as red flags with this new deal. You look over their time with ESPN, the UFC. During that span, a lot of complaints that you would hear from MMA fans is, you know, the quality of the cards. There's so many fight nights every weekend pretty much is a card. they would complain a lot about, you know, the cards. There's not really that many names on there that people want to watch, or the matchups aren't really that great. So I'm wondering if there's going to be any change with this, or change to that in this new deal. Another thing is fighter pay, of course. When you're getting rid of the pay-per-view buys, you're getting rid of the pay-per-view model, you're also getting rid of guys' ability to say, I am a pay-per-view draw. I am somebody who brings in these numbers with pay-per-views. And then, of course, the pay-per-view, you know, layout of how they got paid based on how many purchases there were. So now that's gone. How are these fighters going to get paid? Where's the pay scale? Are we going to hear more complaints about fighter pay from the UFC, or are we going to hear less? And then finally, have we ever seen a sporting event streamed live on Paramount? Has Paramount ever had anything like that before?
They do. I believe they do a lot of soccer.
A lot of soccer?
Yeah. I don't know about, like, what a Holloway, Holloway Poirier type card, right, mm-hmm. that we watched a couple of weeks ago, how that would go down. But soccer is a massive audience, and they do quite a bit of that. So I would assume that they are, to your point, technologically ready for something like that.
Wouldn't both of you agree, though? We're talking about a guy who literally at times will, if he's unhappy with a production, will literally, the second that the production's over, go back and rewatch it with a fine-tooth comb and get it corrected. As emphatic and meticulous as Dana White is about his productions and sure. his production, he's going to make sure, like when he did The Sphere, he wanted that thing to be the best. I think that's something he's definitely looked into.
And the last thing I'll say about it too is it's interesting how Netflix was kind of like being teased as the favorite to land this deal
yeah.
with the UFC.
Yeah.
And like you said, next month they're going to have Canelo Crawford on there with Dana White being a promoter for that boxing event. So you have to think to yourself, was Netflix always kind of a tease in order to get that price range where they needed with Paramount? Or, you know, what does this do with their relationship with Dana, Netflix, Turki Alsheikh, boxing, and everything else going forward? Will there be any type of, you know, well, is Netflix going to be more boxing versus MMA? You know what I mean? So,
or there's no strain and UFC is in bed with Paramount, Netflix is in bed with boxing, and Dana White's in bed with everybody.
Well, it's exactly what that is. And I want to, we'll do this later. Your point, I think, is one of the more salient points as well. Hey, MMA bros and gals, remember a few months ago, like a few years ago, when we were talking about unionizing and trying to get together and doing all that? Here's a $7.7 billion deal. Where's your cut of it?